Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 12:21 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is Friday, and it is February 23rd. And of course, being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio and video for the various different asset classes. Well, what I'd like to talk about this week, there are two things that are at the front of my mind that I'd like to discuss. One is Africa, because I've seen an increasingly large number of articles and data points that have been and rather illuminative illustrations that have been popping up about Africa, and that is also a place that is, I think, on the cusp of some greater recognition from investors, and there's already evidence that people are starting to migrate towards it. So that tells us two things. One, it tells us that there is increasing demand for yield, that people are looking at things that can grow in a high growth manner so that they can outpace any inflation that might appear. And that is something that we anticipate in the latter stages of a medium term expansion. So I think that that's further evidence that we are in the latter stages of this medium term advance. So if maybe a year ago we could have said that we were at the end of the beginning of if we were at the beginning of the end of the beginning of a secular bull market, well, I think now we're in the middle of the end of the beginning of a secular bull market. That sounds very convoluted, but what I'm trying to illustrate is that you have medium-term cyclical bull markets that occur within secular bull markets, and I think that is perhaps the most important point to recognize. There are an increasing number of indicators that are pointing towards the fact that we are in a maturing phase of a cyclical bull market, but we are still in the reasonably early stages of a secular bull market. Well, one of the things that illustrates that point very clearly is the fact that SpaceX took off with two important satellites this week alone. And those are that big technology companies like Facebook or Google or indeed SpaceX, what they are looking at is how do you grow your business? Well, SpaceX is looking to become the preeminent internet provider for the globe. They are looking at a medium to longer term strategy of deploying an array of satellites that is going to carpet the sky in internet ready an internet availability. And there are approximately 2 to 3 billion people today that do not have internet access. And that's going to change in the next decade. That means that the kind of step change in the digital economy that we've seen in India over the last 12 months, and that is really only just beginning to get started, is something that we can anticipate that's going to roll out to the rest of the global economy over the course of the next decade. This is a massive secular change. And because we already have an environment where most people have a mobile phone, but that they either don't have internet connectivity or they are connecting at very slow speeds that in actual fact make it pretty much useless, then the introduction of 4G for the vast majority of people, and later 5G, which will initially start in America and in Europe. But these are going to represent technological shifts that are going to raise the living standards of literally billions of people. And some of the most acute benefits are going to be in Africa. When we think about some of the things then that Africa has, well, they have lots of people. So this is a chart of the countries that have got the most acutely fast-growing populations. Democratic Republic of Congo stands out right there in the middle of Africa. But it's a pretty simple illustration here that there are going to be a lot of people born in Africa over the course of the next few decades, and that in order for those people to reach their productive capacity, the ability of their governments to deliver on improving governance is going to be integral. There are some countries that have been able to deliver on that. There are others that are backsliding. When we look at, for example, South Africa, in just the last couple of weeks, they've ousted Zuma, introduced Ramaphosa, who was Mandela's original choice to take over from him. And now he has got some significant challenges in front of him. But certainly the rand has been appreciating, and the South African stock market has been responding in kind. That's certainly one area where we definitely see improving governance. On the other hand, one of the darlings of the investment community has been Ethiopia, and they have pretty close to martial law being introduced in the last couple of weeks, and not least because it's not a democracy. They've got single party government that has been in place, albeit in an almost benevolent dictatorship type of scenario for much of the last 20 years, but now the relatively oppressed majority are looking for a greater slice of economic growth. That becomes part and parcel of economic growth, that people who are on the sidelines want to get more of it. It can lead to inflation. But if they can manage their way through this, well, then that will be a massive step in terms of governance for that country. Then you have Nigeria, which has been synonymous with corruption forever. That's probably not all that different today, but it is certainly getting better. And when you look at these kinds of high population countries, if you can get governance improving, well, then that lays the bed for some of the technological improvements that are coming down the line to really take hold. And internet connectivity is one that allows them to jump major stages of their infrastructure. So, with internet connectivity, then you can jumpstart education, you can jumpstart banking, and you can jumpstart education and trade. But of course, you still need vital pieces of infrastructure like manufacturing. You need ports and roads, and those are the kinds of things that that Africa desperately needs. So that's certainly something that is coming down the line. Well, when we look at the kind, this is another way of looking at population. So Africa is going to represent just about all of the growth in the global population from about 2020 onwards. And that's just another way of looking at that particular piece of data. Well, there is, when we just, if we stick with this population theme, this is again another way of looking at this data, that it is, there are going to be a lot more Africans over the course of the next 100 years than there are today. And what that represents is a sea of human capacity that if it can be harnessed, then we're going to have a then Africa today probably looks more like Asia did maybe 60 years ago. And one of the important points about the capital markets in Africa is that if you look at the entire continent stretching from Morocco to Egypt and Egypt to South Africa, there are only 1,700 listed companies, and that's for the continent. That will tell us just how immature the capital markets are, and that also helps to I think really drive home the point that this is where you're going to have billions of people born over the course of the next 30 years, and if governance does improve, then they are going to represent a massive source of productivity growth for the global economy. And that is something that I think people are beginning to cotton on to. Well, that's all well and good. These are when you have that number of people, then their consumption of food is obviously going to trend higher. So that is also something that we should be looking at. And obviously, when you look at the price of anything, then the demand cycle tends to be less volatile than the supply cycle, and that's why we have these very big trends in commodity prices. And I will certainly look at some of those as well. But then we also look at where the growth is coming from, and if we simply look at the growth figures, at that it's a significant number of emerging markets are at the upper side of these growth figures, with Ethiopia coming in at about 7.2%, and that was last year. or perhaps even 2016. But that also helps to highlight just where the problems are, and where governance has been sharply deteriorating is in somewhere like Venezuela. And I saw figures today that monthly inflation is running at about 80%. That's rather profound, and that is obviously going to have a deleterious effect. The fact that Venezuela has decided that they're going to issue a cryptocurrency to try and get money into the country and successfully got around $700 million is almost like the it is it would appear to be to whiff of desperation, at least to me, and that this is perhaps only going to delay the final deterioration that we're seeing in that country. Now, when I think about all of these particular these trends, well, one of the things that that really popped out to me was the fact that we're getting an increasing number of these African markets breaking out to new high ground. So here is Tunisia. It's at a new high, and it has broken up and out of a 7-year range. And it isn't the only one. It is a very similar situation for Botswana, for South Africa, and for, I think, it's not, I think Ghana is the other one that has been doing rather well. Morocco is also breaking upwards. Now, there are two reasons why markets like this tend to do well. Well, one is because of all the factors I've just been explaining, that it's population growth. It's because they're coming off such very low basis that you get this this move. But then what you also get is the fact that it's got a higher yield. So people tend to look on these types of countries as places where you can get a better return on your money, and they tend to do well in the latter stages of medium-term bull markets. This was exactly the same thing that we saw in during the last bull market, when Africa was really fashionable, was particularly back in 2007 and 2008, when we had the bull market in commodities. And what we have increasing evidence of is that these commodities are doing better. So, for example, when we look at the London Metals Index, then the industrial metals had a pretty firm week last week and have held on to the majority of the advance in here this week. When you look at, for example, something like lead, which doesn't tend to make a great deal of headlines, but it is coming up to the upper side of an almost decade-long range and has been holding a progression of higher reaction lows for 2 years. And zinc has already broken upwards. Even the nickel price, which has been the laggard in the industrial metal complex, has been marching higher over the course of the last few months. And not least because people are beginning to look on it as a potential beneficiary from electric or electric car growth. And the other big beneficiary of that is cobalt. And the LME cobalt future hasn't got nearly the liquidity of some of these other markets, but we do get a price, and it continues to march higher on a supply and elasticity meets rising demand environment. Well, this return to performance of the industrial metal complex, and indeed the relative strength of the resources sector generally, and indeed energy, that all helps to benefit commodity producers. That's as true of high beta markets like Africa as it is of the main commodity producers like Brazil or Russia or South Africa or even indeed Argentina. That even when you look at Russia, which has been under sanctions, it is continuing to respond to the reasonably firm energy prices and the fact that the finances of these commodity producing countries have improved with higher oil prices. So the depreciation of the currencies that we saw for the real or for the ruble in 2014 and 2015 have been reversed in many cases, and the relative weakness of the dollar of late has also added an additional tailwind for these currencies. Well, the return to performance of cyclical sectors, like the resources sector, is one of the primary points that contribute to the conclusion that we are in the latter stages of a maturing medium-term bull market. And generally, what we anticipate is that these types of sectors would be among the leading performers into a market peak, and they are increasingly doing better. So that is certainly, I think, rather bullish. Then, if we look at the banking sector, it is also returning to a position of outperformance, and that is also a rather benign outcome. So it does tell us that interest rates are beginning to rise. And there has been a significant number of column inches being devoted to the argument about inflation over the course of the last few weeks. Well, 3% is a big psychological level for a lot of people on US Treasuries because it represented the low for the market back during the taper tantrum in 2013. But I think anyone can see, even on a monthly chart, that the yield has raced to get up to this level, and it is due some pause in consolidation. Even in the context of a developing base formation, that it does look increasingly likely that it will be resolved with a break on the upside, there is still room for some pause in consolidation. And when we devote our attention to the short term, then there is a short term oversold condition. And the price is firming from this 120 area, and it has a wide overextension relative to the trend mean. Even in a bearish environment where one would anticipate that prices would go considerably lower over the medium term, there is still short-term potential for an unwinding of this oversold condition. And we're getting a similar condition in the German Bunds. And that was a rather significant rally in here today, which is taking the price back up towards the lower side of this overhead trading range and unwinding the short-term oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Well, one of the things that has been abundantly clear in the fixed income markets has been commonality, that it's an increasingly large number of government bonds are breaking lower. There might be short-term oversold conditions, but the medium-term outlook is moving towards an inflationary bias. And generally speaking, commodities do reasonably well during an inflationary bias. Gold, in particular, is coming up towards the upper side of what is, in many respects, a five-year range. It has been ranging below $1,400 since 2013. The clear change in the trend was in 2016, when you had this very powerful rally which broke the progression of lower rally highs. And so far, on a 10-year basis, this pause in consolidation in the region of the upper side of this base formation over the last 6 weeks has been relatively inert, compared to the volatility that gold is capable of. And as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, and perhaps more importantly holding the more than year-long progression of higher reaction lows, then I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside that it will eventually break higher. And what that would suggest is that that gold is probably being viewed at this stage as a hedge, that we have had an enormous amount of debt created over the course of the last decade, and a lot of that is going to be refinanced over the course of the next few years. So when you look at what just simply looking at treasury issuance, there is going to be a great deal of issuance in 2018. But then there's going to be a lot of bonds maturing in 2019, 2020, and particularly in 2021. So that's, I think, a rather important characteristic, that generally speaking, it isn't at the absolute level of bond issuance that tends to be a problem, but it is when those bonds come up for refinancing, then the question of how well the issuer is going to be able to make the coupon payment subsequently is going to be a significant factor. So that's a bit of a, that wasn't much of a factor last year, but it's more of a factor this year. Then it's going to be an even bigger factor next year, even bigger again in 2020. And that's one of the big questions that many people are asking is how can the Fed continue to raise interest rates if it is going to have such a deleterious effect on the ability of the US Treasury to continue to pay its liabilities? And the swift answer is that it just goes back to central banking 101. If we look at the velocity of money and not simply on just a week or a month to month basis, but look at as much history as we've got. Well, it trended lower from 1997. The disintermediation of the internet and the Greenspan put, followed by the Bernanke put, followed by the Yellen put, has contributed to this well of additional money supply flowing into the market anytime there's been a source of trouble. And that has both of those factors have contributed to the velocity of money deteriorating. Well, now we're at a period of time where the fiscal constraints and fiscal discipline that was such a factor in public life over the last decade more have been abandoned. That is certainly the case now in the USA, and even in Europe, where fiscal austerity contributed to a deflationary environment all the way from 2010 through to 2014, it's also been abandoned. And the Europeans have increased the size of their balance sheet by 2.5 trillion euros in the last 3 years. Well, when you have governments that are running deficits, and you have central banks that are thinking about removing the supply of money, well, they're only going to do that when you have a deficit-fueled boom, and there is, I think, a realistic possibility that that's what we get. I think that is what that has contributed to the strength in the stock markets over the course of the last years, that people have been pricing in the potential for a stock market boom. And a boom would necessitate, would probably correspond with an uptick in the velocity of money. Now, velocity of money is quoted in arrears and with a 1 month lag. So this uptick in volatility that was quoted in December is probably more representative of what the economy was doing back in June of last year. So it is not a, even a coincident indicator. But if it is turning higher, then the logical response from central banks will be to remove liquidity from the market for the very simple reason that if they fail to do so, they will get an inflationary problem that they may not be able to tackle. And I think that is something that I wrote about in Crowd Money, and it's a view I've had for what feels like a long time, is that we were unlikely to have an inflationary outcome until the velocity of money started to turn upwards. Well, it did turn up at the end of December, and if the trend persists, then the chances are we are going to have an inflationary outcome. And I think it's worth highlighting that the last time people were reasonably worried about inflation was on the run-up that we had way back in the early 2000s. And all the way through to 2006, one could make a reasonable argument that inflation was starting to return. Well, then we had the credit crisis and the commodity bust, so we had this massive deterioration in the velocity of money. But if we are moving into a period of time where fiscal austerity and rectitude is being abandoned because of the failure of quantitative easing to generate the kind of rising living standards that people have been accustomed to, then that is likely to create an inflationary outcome. And I believe that that is also why we're starting to see this increasing focus on the frontier markets, because the kinds of markets that tend to do best in an inflationary environment are either going to be those that can raise their dividends faster than the rate of inflation, or those that can grow faster than the rate of inflation. So that certainly fits into the narrative for why some of these emerging African economies should be attracting greater interest. It's also why the commodities are attracting greater interest and cyclical shares, not least the banking sector, is attracting greater interest. Well, the market, I think, that is likely to benefit most from a return to an inflationary bias is Japan. The Nikkei is back in the region of the trend mean, but I think the particular focus should be on the banking sector, because the Japanese banks are low, and the last time they were this low was back in 2002. They are, and this has been a volatile environment over the course of the last 4 years, but even a whiff of higher interest rates in Japan, or the removal of quantitative easing, or even the tapering of quantitative easing, is likely to correspond with a substantial re-rating in this sector. And the banks are now right in the region of the trend mean, and they represent a hedge against inflation that is not expensive. I think gold is not an expensive hedge against inflation either. That if we look at some of the results of the major mining companies that have been released over the last few weeks, then we can see that their all-in costs are somewhere in the region of $800 to $900 for some of the very large players, and lower than that for some of the single mine plays. Well, what that suggests is that gold trading right now around the 1300 and it's above $1,350, has a cushion above which the miners can still be profitable, but it's not a big cushion, and prices are certainly not high enough to justify investing in a lot of new supply. So there is a supply and elasticity argument if demand starts to pick up, and it could pick up if inflation starts to become more of an issue. But I think that's a medium-term consideration. One of the, I think, important points that it really does need to be highlighted is that we had a substantial pullback in February, and that we are now seeing a rally, and the rally has not ended yet. The fact that the S&P 500 is finishing out the week at the upper side of this range is really quite bullish. And it helps to confirm that we have near-term support in the region of the trend mean. But even when we look at the other sharp pullbacks that we've seen in the course of this advance, whether in 2011 after the flash crash then, or in 2015 on two occasions when we had sharp pullbacks, then it contributed to ranging, and that it held up the market for a rather significant amount of time. Now, there is a difference on this occasion relative to those occasions, and it's high yield spreads. So when we look at the Barclays high yield spread over treasuries, it is still relatively inert. It pushed up to the upper side of its range last week or 2 weeks ago, but now it has pulled back into that range. Well, back in 2015, it was already trending higher and had been trending higher for a year. And that higher high yield spread acted as a headwind for the market. So we have not yet seen the high yield spreads starting to widen out. And what that suggests is that this is still a reasonably benign environment for the credit markets. Then the canaries in the coal mine that I've been identifying for much of the last 6 months, like Tesla. Well, Tesla has not broken below 300. In fact, it's back up to 350 over the course of the last 2 weeks. And Netflix is the other high yield company that has benefited almost singularly from access to cheap liquidity, and it is pushing new closing highs in here this week. So what that suggests is that the access to liquidity that these companies have is still open, and the failure of the high yield spreads to respond in any meaningful way to the volatility that we've had over the course of the last few weeks is a testament to just how powerful this environment still is, but also to the fact that central banks are talking about removing liquidity, but they haven't really yet done it. Now, the VIX index is pulling back towards this 15 area. I tend to think that it's unlikely it is going to pull back below 15, and extremely unlikely that we're going to see a sustained move below 10 anytime soon. The short VIX strategy is really probably over. Then, when we look at the central bank balance sheets, we can see that this trend is still moving higher, and it was at 20.6 trillion in here today. Now, when we look at the broad trend of central bank balance sheets, the most important point is that it is still going up. There was a lot of talk this week about what the euro was going to do, what the ECB was going to do, but they're going to be buying 30 billion of bonds a month until September. So that continues to represent a source of fuel for this market. Japan is still engaged in quantitative easing, and it will end its program probably after the ECB. So what that suggests is that this tailwind of liquidity flowing into the market remains intact, that we have had a failure of the volatility short trade, and that has contributed to greater volatility on markets generally. But I think when we think about it in those terms, it's I think important to differentiate the kinds of markets that have done that have been slowest to rally, and those that are already back at their peaks. So, for example, the Indonesian market didn't really pull back at all, and the Indian market didn't really. It's been pulling back for its own reasons, but not in a particularly dynamic manner, and it was in positive territory again in here today. Then, if we look at the Chinese market, well, China pulled back very violently. Then it closed for a week during the New Year holiday, and it's subsequently catching up on the rebound, but it is not back at its peak. Facebook has come under some significant pressure over the last few weeks because of its role in Russian tampering with the US election, but it is now bouncing from the region of the trend mean. And as long as it re continues to hold that low from 2 weeks ago, then I think that's going to be a significant bellwether for the share generally. Then, when we look at some of the other markets that had the bigger pullbacks, I think Taiwan is bouncing in here this week following a rather swift 2 week pullback, but it bounced from the 10,000 point level. And that 10,000 point level is a big psychological level for this market, considering it hasn't been able to push above it since 1990, and that feels like an awfully long time ago. Then the South Korean market was also additionally firm in here today. So we're starting to see that support is coming back in the region of the trend mean for not just the emerging Asia, but the developed Asian markets as well. The FTSE 100 is firming from above the 7,000 level, and that 7,000 level represents the upper side of this long-term underlying range. So these are markets that had not really rallied very powerfully on the upside. They had pulled back rather sharply, and Europe generally had pulled back sharply, excuse me. But when we look at the environment, that Europe has now bounced, and it's right in the region of the trend mean. These have generally been lagging markets, and the strength of the euro, and indeed the strength of the pound over the last year, represent headwinds in terms of nominal performance. So that is weighing on their nominal price appreciation. And then there are these continued questions about governance in Europe, and the rise of populism, and what that's likely to do to the integration project that's been underway for the last 50 years. The rise of populism continues to represent a new theme. It is not so much a rise of populism, or xenophobia, or isolationism, or indeed racism. but rather it is a reaction to the status quo. And the clear evidence that we have from the USA is that the answer to populism and to a simple demand from the disenfranchised and those that have been left out from the growth of, or I guess the ones that have been left out from the benefits of quantitative easing, is for more money in their pockets. So the likelihood is that we are going to get more fiscal largesse, and that is going to contribute to, generally speaking, probably a better performance in stock markets, because it represents a stimulus that we have transitioned from synchronized global monetary expansion to synchronized global fiscal expansion. And that fiscal expansion will create inflation. So then we're going to see a transition. And what I find particularly interesting, and that is going to contribute to the rotation that we're having, is that consumer staples, where Walmart is a significant weighting, then their yield is moving almost in lockstep with treasuries. Well, we've had a loss of momentum over the course of the last 2 years. The consumer staples are highly leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, and the global consumer is doing fine. And the growth of the emerging markets is a substantial tailwind for their businesses. But it is the security of their cash flows that investors had been flocking to them for. And with rising bond yields, then they will be expected to increase the rate of their dividend growth, or they're going to be the recipients of selling pressure until their yields become competitive with bonds. Well, right now their yields are competitive with bonds, but I think it is reasonable to expect that if US Treasury yields break above 3%, then it is going to have a deleterious effect on the consumer staples sector. And that is part of the rotation that I've been talking about. That on the one hand, you have the commodity sector and the banking sector, and indeed the high growth part of the biotech sector doing rather well. But it is the bond proxies will be sold down until their yields are competitive with bonds. That needn't necessarily mean that they are in fact the proxies for bonds. I would consider that utilities are a much closer bond proxy than consumer staples, but the performance of the stock market index would also, I think, agree with that conclusion. Utilities have pulled back more, and they are subsequently bouncing more with some relative strength coming back into the bond futures market. And consumer staples have got that two-pronged approach. What it suggests to me is that in the event that the consumer staples are sold down aggressively on if we can't call it a taper tantrum, but a quantitative tightening tantrum, then they are going to represent a considerable source of value, considering the leverage they offer to the growth of the global consumer. But when we think about these things in over the medium term, I think that the most likely scenario for stock markets is that for Wall Street, we're in for a range, and that as long as the five major mega cap shares from the technology sector are continuing to trade above their trend means, then it's going to be hard to argue that we are in anything other than a ranging environment generally. When we think about what's the fact that it is the cyclical sectors are gaining attention, well, that tells us that we are in the latter stages of the bull market. But it is not the end. And I think that's perhaps the most important point. The yield curve spread is still positive, and it's at 62 basis points. Well, it was at 80 basis points 2 weeks ago. But it's not at zero. And more importantly, it's not below zero. And when it's below zero, it gives us a lead indicator for future recessions of anything from 6 to 18 months. So what that suggests is that we're unlikely to have a recession in 2018. We've already looked at high yield spreads It is difficult to conclude that we're going to have a big problem in stock markets unless high yield spreads have been trending higher for a while. So that has not yet occurred, and therefore that's not an indicator for a recession soon. We are not seeing a massive run up in oil prices. Oil prices are steady, and they have bounced from the $60 area, but they are not surging higher. And again, that is not that doesn't gel with the conclusion that we're about to have an imminent recession. Rather, that it's very unlikely we're going to have a recession in 2018 without any of these factors starting to really come to fruition. And the other lead indicator is unemployment. And unemployment is still trending lower in the USA. And I think if we look at that long-term chart, we can see that we are at historic lows for unemployment. So when it eventually does start to tick upwards, and most particularly if it starts to tick upwards during a massive fiscal stimulus, well, then that's going to be a lead indicator for trouble. But it is not yet moving higher. And when we look at all of these potential lead indicators, and most particularly the stock market has had a reaction against the prevailing trend. We've had a pullback of 10%, and we haven't seen one of those in a while. And I think the most benign environment is that we do get a rangy, we do get some consolidation, and the market goes sideways. Now, that is if we're still in a reasonably I think if we're not in a euphoric stage. On the other hand, if markets surge higher from here and completely ignore the massive reaction against the prevailing trend and do not consolidate and surge higher from here, well, then we're in the third psychological per we're in the not just in the third psychological perception stage, we're at the end of the third psychological perception stage of the bull market. And that will be a time then to get really diligent about stops. So, I think the most likely scenario is that we do get a range, and that will contribute to valuations coming down somewhat. And the most likely scenario is that we do get an uptick in growth, we do get an uptick in inflation, and we do get yields starting to move higher over the medium term, and that will eventually contribute to a recessionary environment, but probably not in 2018. And what that suggests is that oversold conditions, when they appear, are likely to represent buying opportunities, but that it is probably not the best time to go chasing accelerations. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend, and I will wish all the best to all of you.